Hey, everyone. We're so glad you're here. I'm Alisa Monjadas. I'm a marketing leader and executive coach.
I'm Courtney Copeland, and I'm an accountability and wellness coach.
And I'm Dr. Mirari Simeon, an activator of talent, HR executive, author, and working mom.
If you're anything like the successful multicultural women we interview on the What Rules podcast, you've learned that you can't do it alone. And we teach women like yourself to outsmart the game to get ahead in your career.
We're really talking about those rules that we grew up with as women and the expectations that have been placed on us.
Our mission is to change the face of leadership at What Rules podcast. As you listen to our talented guests, take note and take action. Go ahead, go and break those rules.
Episode 100. Congratulations, ladies.
We made it.
Yay.
Who would have thought?
Does it feel like 100 episodes to you?
It depends on the day.
Yes.
I would agree.
Yeah. It depends on the day. I think it's exciting, but at the same time, kind of sad. I can't believe it's 100.
Yeah, we started this technically in 2019, and then we released the episodes, the first episode in February 2020. Yes. And now here we are. This episode releases March 2025 for Women's History Month. Wow. So I think it's just very fitting to have our 100th episode for the 2025 Women's History Month. And I just want to give a shout out to the team that has been working behind the scenes. Some people for a few years, some people from all the way through. Everyone from Stories Bureau, Alexandra Uresta, our producer, Josh Ramsey, Tim Ballant, and Math Ardeleon. They have been amazing, an amazing team, like helping us keep this going. We literally could not do it without all of you guys. So thank you for making this so possible. And for all your hard work. And one of the
making us sound good.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Making us sound way smarter than we are too. I always say that. That's a special shout out to Josh because that's all him. And also Josh, our editor, we never talk about him, but he's here in this recording today. But he knows all the rules that women have been breaking. And he could probably do this podcast with his eyes closed, like be a host.
Great. We should have invited him, right?
I was gonna say, should we bring him on as a guest?
I know. Okay. Future What Rules episode, Josh Ramsey. And the other announcement I have is that we won Listener's Choice and Silver Woo-hoo! Signal Awards for episode 72, How Managers Can Fix the Broken Rung. So thank you so much to all of our listeners for voting us. Like, we got gold awards because of our listeners. So, yeah, if you're watching the YouTube, Midadi has hers. Oh, I see Courtney. You have yours behind you, too. Oh, here, if I scoot, maybe you can see my silver one. There we go.
Yeah, I see it.
Yeah, so congratulations to everyone. And then also congratulations to all the women listening to this podcast because we are celebrating you today. We're talking about the Women's History Month theme, moving forward together, women educating and inspiring generations. So with that said, let's just kind of like talk about what it means to lead with purpose. We are multicultural women. We are talking to multicultural women. Midadi, what does that mean to you?
Such a big question. I could go in so many ways, but what I would say to me personally, leading with purpose as a multicultural woman started with knowing who I am. And I believe for all of us as multicultural women starts with knowing who we are and knowing that our life experiences, our cultural insights, and our own perspectives are assets. They're not obstacles. When we lead with purpose as multicultural women, we create a leadership style that is authentic and that is impactful for the other women that see us, that recognize us, and that look to us to pave the path because we are here right now, but there's so many others that have done it before us. Like you all know the Ursula Burns, right? The first Black woman that led Fortune 500 company. Indra Nooyi, the first Indian American woman that was just a huge CEO of PepsiCo. And then other women like Maria Lensing, right, from today, that is a global CIO, or Monica Lozano. So to me, these women recognize who they were and owned it and continue to own it for women like us and for other women that are coming behind us to lead with purpose and recognize what we need to do. So that's where it starts for me, is knowing who I am and authentically bringing every piece of me to corporate America and showing that it's an asset and not an obstacle.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Asset, not an obstacle.
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah. I mean, that's what it means to move forward. That's what we're talking about, moving forward together.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's like, it's not easy, but it can be an asset. I don't know. What do you think, Courtney?
I mean, I think it's not easy, but it can be an asset. I think starting with the it's not easy part, like everyone you just named, what I'm so grateful for is that, like, we have all these mirrors, right? And like, that's why we have this podcast, to create more representation. And so even listeners have mirrors like through us, and we pass on the wisdom that we've gained from our mentors over the years and other women we've admired. And I think the not easy part, the first thing that came to mind is just like, these women have so much resilience and grace, and leading with purpose is also leading with intentionality. Like what you just talked about is, you got to know who you are, and then it helps to create more of those mirrors with a very intentional purpose.
Like, you both said something that was important. It's not easy, but it goes back to one of the themes that we talk about, embrace adversity, right? So in those times, it's about how do we embrace that adversity so that we can continue to lead with intention and to really live our purpose. Because at the end of the day, it's absolutely not easy. But if we don't embrace our adversity, we take ourselves out of the race.
Yeah.
And we really fail to live our purpose, if that is our purpose. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's hard when you can feel alone in the process and you like want to show up and you want to be the best example for more women who look like us. But it can just feel so exhausting. Like you have this weight on your shoulders and you're like, how do I forge ahead? And choosing resilience isn't always easy, you know? Like, it's, even if you have the willingness, it doesn't make it easier. So I would love to like chat more about that. Like, what do you do to fight that battle specifically when you are feeling alone, or when you do feel like you're so exhausted from feeling alone?
It's a great question. And I go back to knowing why it started in the first place. And really keeping my eye on the vision, which is create what I want to see, multicultural women in positions of power in corporate America. So for me, I realized that owning my power takes work, because not everybody recognizes your power and not everybody's going to recognize your worth, but it starts with me knowing. And I think the other piece that you mentioned when embracing adversity, for me, and knowing it's not easy, sometimes... Well, many times we talk about not doing it alone by getting mentors and sponsors, but I think of it a little deeper now. And I think of it of not doing it alone by bringing others with me. Because yes, we could have all of these mentors and sponsors, which is what's going to help us move up. But when you bring others along, when you pull other women with you, you create a community that is so powerful, because now we're all in it together. I'm no longer experiencing this alone. Now I have my tribe, and we are here to support each other. And we are here in the same organization or whatever team or however you call it. But I think it's really important that when we talk about not doing it alone, we also talk about what are we doing to bring other women with us. Other multicultural women, for that matter.
And you know what? That can also mean venting. Like, we just had a little vent sesh right before we started recording because, like, we needed it, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes it means, like, telling someone like, oh my gosh, can you believe this? So like, ooh, you know, it doesn't mean go like complain, because that's probably, there's probably something that says that's bad. But like getting it out is really important because it like reduces that, your stress level by just like getting it out and not holding it in.
And yeah, you talked about this before, Courtney, because it creates a safe space. So you may not have it over here, but you create it. You create that safe space by not doing it alone. And I think that helps as well when it comes to embracing adversity.
I would say also asking questions. Like, Elisa, you were just saying like venting, but venting doesn't necessarily have to just be like, I'm going to tell you all the things on my mind, but coming to you and being like, hey, like, any chance you feel this way too? Or have you ever experienced this, or have you thought about that?
Yes.
And honestly, I find like those kind of questions will open up the door for so much release, far more than just being like, listen to all the thoughts on my mind, which you can obviously do that in your safe spaces. I'm not saying you shouldn't, but I think that's helped me a lot in my leadership, at least.
I think sometimes though, you know, when you said how hard it is going back to that, sometimes when you do ask those questions, you get some hard answers back. And that's also part of embracing that adversity, because sometimes what people may say is not what you want to hear, or you as a multicultural woman know that is coming from a biased perspective. So then it even becomes that much harder. So I love what you're saying. Ask the questions. But I also believe we need to be prepared and know that it comes to a point where you got to decide, do I need to step out or do I just need to stand my ground? Because that's a decision that we each need to make sure that, number one, we're taking care of our well-being, because it could be toxic. Mm-hmm. But embracing adversity also means, you know what, maybe I'm going to lean in, or maybe I'm going to step out. So I think we got to look at it in different ways. I don't think there's a magic bullet, a magic answer to it all.
I literally this week had one friend that I said, get out. And then another friend who just got promoted to a new position. And this friend called me and said, I should probably give it 6 months and then like decide. And I was like, no. Stay and fail, because that was like the concern. Like, but what if I fail? And I was like, no, like, don't leave because you might fail. Stay and fail. And then call me when you do, and I'll celebrate your failure, because you got like, this is a brand new position. Like, you're going to fail. You just have to like, you just have to know that's going to happen. And, but like with the other friend, it was like, it was a clear get out. And I think like, that's why we need each other, because we can, when you're on the outside, it's much easier to see, you know,
where the person needs to be.
I have a question, a little bit of a tangent, but I think it's worth exploring, because someone might hear that and be like, what do you mean fail? Like, you want me to fail? What's the value in failing?
I remember when I first started working at this tech company, we did this like spaghetti exercise, and it was like you had to make a tower with spaghetti noodles. I don't know if you guys have ever done that. And it was like, I was like determined to win. Like, I'm going to make my tower the tallest. It's like, and I didn't. And the CEO of the company came to me and he was like, I think you're afraid of failure. And I was like, well, yeah, of course. Who wants to fail? And he was like, if you want to work here, you really need to learn how to fail and how to fail fast, because you're going to. And like when he said that, it completely changed my mindset and my mentality, because one, it made me feel safe to fail. Like, you're not going to get, because that was my friend's concern. Like, if I fail, I'm going to get fired. And I remembered this one at this one job, I accidentally lost $12,000. And that was a failure for sure. And it felt like the biggest thing in the world. But I think over time, my failures have like built resilience in me. And what I explained to my friend the other day about failure was like, you know, when you're growing and you have to fail to get to the next level.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you, and then once you get to the, I was like, guess what? Once you get to the next level, you're going to fail again. And then to her, I was like, and guess what? It all sucks. Like, it's never fun.
But I love that because we had not talked about that as much. And I think it's huge because it happens every day in your life, no matter what stage in your life you're in. Because I can tell you, even as a parent, oh, honey, there is no manual. You will fail a lot of times. And you will see the result of your failures. But then there's other times when you do really great and you learn as you go along. But it's the same thing with, because I'm sure, Courtney, I know you do so much from a well-being. I'm sure that you have failed in some of those cases, but that's made you stronger. And I think what you just said, Alisa, is so powerful when it comes to embracing adversity. Because embracing adversity, you know what? I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to fail. But I know that I'm going to learn from it. And easier said than done. I'm not even going to sit here and tell you that just because you fail a lot, it gets easier. No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But it is how you rebound for that. It's interesting because from a sports perspective, one of the things that coaches look for is how quickly a player can rebound back from a failure, whether they miss a shot, they miss the ball, or whatever it may be, is how quickly they can be like, okay, done it. Let's move on. I got next. So, and I think that's important for even us and women in culture, in corporate America.
I remember when I used to do CrossFit, whenever I say that out loud, I'm like, really, me? Like, I can't believe I used to do it. But our coach would, when we would like not be able to lift a heavy weight, he would have us count to three and go again. What that did for me psychologically was it like helped me to get out of my head and just keep going. So it was like, oh, I couldn't do it. One, two, three, do it again. Like, you just gotta like keep it up. And then after a while, I stopped concentrating on the failure and started focusing on getting stronger.
That's what we say in Solid Core. It doesn't get easier, but you get stronger.
There you go.
All the time. And you just start to like handle those failures better too. And it's no longer a sign of weakness. It becomes a sign of strength. And it becomes a sign of like, oh, hell yeah, I'm getting closer. Like, that's so exciting. Like, a failure isn't deflating, and it becomes a little bit more energizing because you're like, okay, well, guess what? I have to be one step closer. At least that's how I see it.
And I think it's also, I go back to when you're walking in your purpose is knowing your worth and knowing that this failure is not going to define me, but also recognizing that there are times where we're going to fail because we just don't know. And there are times where what's around you, it's not there to support you. So kind of like the platform falls, right? When you're walking and just the platform falls out. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not your fault, but many times I go back and I think, okay, whether that was my fault or not, what can I do different? So I go back to me and growing so that I don't fall the same way that I did the last time. So even when it's not our fault, because we hear that all the time, right? There is so much struggle for multicultural women to succeed in corporate America. And some of it is our own doing, some of it is not. But where we grow is recognizing what can I do different next time so that I don't fall into that same trap. Because we already see, we already lived some of these experiences.
I think when you're thinking about what it really means to stand up and be firm when there are barriers, when there's bias, when there's pushback, when there's the failure, what does that actually look like? You know, we've heard that, like, stand firm. We're even using the term, like, move forward. What does that actually practically look like?
I don't think there's one formula. I go back to what Alisa said earlier. Sometimes standing firm is standing firm in my worth and walking out. And sometimes standing firm is saying, I'm going to go through this. And when I'm done, even if I fail, I'm going to be stronger and better and wiser. So to me, there's different ways. I don't look at it as one way. I look at it as it means something different for everybody. depending where you are in your journey, but also what's going on in your life at the time. Because I can tell you right now, there were times where I was just like, I can't, like, I'm out. And then there was other times where I said, I could deal with this. I could go through this. I could play the game. So I think it just all depends where you're at, what's going on around you. I think the number one thing to remember is, if regardless what's going on, you got to make sure that you take care of yourself, that your mental health is number one, that your well-being is number one, and that you have that support system around you, so that you're not alone. Because to me, sometimes we put our cape on and we want to be their superheroes, and the one that ends up getting hurt long-term from a well-being, mental trauma, all this perspective is us.
I actually started, as I was like really wanting to define my unique leadership style and how I want to show up and owning my voice in certain spaces and what does that look like, something that really helped me from a well-being perspective is actually doing breath work more often and allowing my nervous system to just kind of like settle to its most authentic self, and then using my voice in a space that would previously make me nervous and scare me, I would just show up with a sense of calm, which we were joking about this before we came on here. You two were like, even when you talk about your worst days, why do you sound so calm?
I love it. Yes.
And, you know, I think that when we talk about like forging ahead, sometimes there's this pressure and this expectation for it to sound like super enthusiastic and I got this and like almost sound like such a superwoman. But it's also what I've learned, like it's really okay to also meet it with a level of just like calm and serenity. And at least when we're talking about leadership, like for me, something I have found so much power in is like really owning my feminine in leadership and not letting that fall to the wayside and still bringing in the softness and like taking care of myself while also wanting to show up as like this badass woman in a room. Like you can have both. You don't 100%. Have to choose one.
I've learned the hard way. Owning your power is sometimes is staying quiet. Mm-hmm. And I know that's controversial because people are like, you got to speak up. You got to say this. You got to say that. And sometimes it's being 2-3 steps ahead of what's really going on in the room and waiting for that right time to use your voice. Because I think sometimes we mistaken, or I've seen people like, no, you need to use your voice. Oh, well, I'm going to speak up and say A, B, C, D. There's a right time and a right place and the right audience that is ready to listen. Just because the people are in the room doesn't mean they're listening. You need to make sure that when you're using your voice, you are being intentional about using your voice and making sure that the people that are in that room are ready to listen. And sometimes you may have to do a different meeting or something else for somebody to listen. Thank you for bringing that up, because that calmness is something I still work on it, but I've gotten a lot better.
It's hard
to
be quiet too.
It's hard for me to be quiet. I know.
She said, I know.
Courtney, what's the breathing exercise?
You know, it's so funny. I've been looking into getting my certification in breath work so I can actually lead the practice. But it's somatic breath work. And I feel like if I demonstrate it here, it's going to not come through the mic very well.
Well, like to explain like what it is, or what can we look up to do it?
A really great app that I love. It's the Open app, and that is my favorite breath work I've ever done. I've tried lots of different places. They have a studio in Venice that I go to, and sometimes it's like quick breathing, sometimes it's a little bit slower. But here's a full warning: I did not know this the first time I tried breath work. I thought it was going to be much more like meditation, slow. It's not that. They call it breath work for a reason.
I've done that
work.
Like, and you're like,
yeah.
It's like, is this Lamaze class?
No, actually though, like it takes work. And then to actually keep your mind and body in it, like, it's so much. I don't want to discourage anyone from trying it. It's not like so crazy hard, but it takes effort. And it's really cool. Like, you go into it and breathwork will always, it won't always give you what you want, but it'll always give you what you need. Mm. And that's what I really appreciate about it, because it's a release and like an exhale that allows you to like get out of your own way. And I don't know if anybody else struggles with that as much as I do, but like, and I cannot be alone. That's my share. I am not alone in saying that. Like, it's really hard to get out of your own way when you just want to show up as best as you can. And so then we like put this pressure on ourselves to lead a certain way, to use our voice in a certain way. And honestly, when I do breath work, it just like removes a lot of those like unnecessary, somewhat damaging thoughts, honestly.
Yeah. I think for me, I don't do the breath work. I probably should. you know, you talked about showing up. For me, I feel like every year I become more and more authentic, right? Like, I am not afraid to say, I don't know. I was wrong. And, oh, I messed up. And it's so freeing. Like, ever since I started doing that, it's so freeing to say, oh, you're right. I messed that up. I own it. And I don't have to hide it. And yet at the same time, I'm like, I know I'm smart and that failure doesn't define me. So it's for me, being authentic has been really freeing. And I've also been in situations where being authentic and it's not welcomed, or you're looked at as, oh, you don't know what you're doing. And this is why I go back to what I said in the beginning. You need to know your worth and know who you are, what you stand. And even though these folks around you may not know anything about you and they're judging you by just that one interaction, know that what you walked in your shoes is enough to stand there with all the confidence in the world that you could do anything you put your mind to.
I was in a situation recently with one of my corporate clients, and they asked me to do something that was completely against my values. It wasn't wrong. Like, it wasn't, like, on paper, it didn't seem like a big deal. So when they were asking me to do this, I know they weren't trying to be malicious or anything, but it was so against philosophically, it was about a leader, and it was like how I philosophically disagree with a leadership principle. And I had this moment where I was like, do I say what I believe right now? First of all, there's like so many choices. There's like micro moments of choices. Do I say that I don't agree? First question to myself. Do I say it today? Do I say it now? Do I say it to this person? Is this the right person to be like standing in my truth to? I had to like ask myself all these questions. And I actually, because I decided to speak up and say like what my philosophy was and how I thought it should be done. And they changed what they wanted to do, and they're not using me. And maybe because they don't agree with my philosophy, I don't know. But it would have been worse in that moment if I had stayed silent, because then I would have said yes to something that I don't believe in. And I could have done it. Like, I think 10 years ago me would have said yes and tried to be amenable and then still kind of done it my, like, I would have just gone around it and made it work. But I couldn't. Yeah, I just had to say no. And I had to be okay with the consequences. But
I love that.
Lots of micro.
You're living your values.
Lots of micro questions and decisions. And I think like something that I've learned over the years is taking that pause, even if it's 15 seconds, like after someone, like, instead of just responding, I'm very impulsive. Like, I'm fast. I'm impulsive. I like to answer fast. I like to, you know, everything is fast, fast, fast. But for me, in those moments, I've had to just say 10 seconds isn't going to kill anybody. For me to just like ground myself, think about what I need to say here and be really strategic and decide it, you know, do I, what do I say? How do I say it? And then go for it, no matter the consequences.
You bring something important because I think a lot of people sometimes mistaken their values with flexing their style. And one of the things that people ask, well, how did you make it? What'd you do? I said, I have no issues flexing my style. I have an issue when it comes, when I'm asked to do something that is against my values. Mm-hmm. And when you stand strong in your values, flexing your style is, it's not a hard thing.
Right.
The more that you practice it. Like you said, in the past, you were probably able to flex your style and you have done it in 10 years. But then the more that you realize what your values are and how important they are to you and how your, I don't know, I feel like your soul doesn't let you live in peace when you go against your values.
Right? it's like a value, not like this like right or wrong, but it was like a stylistic value, like a philosophy really. Like this is, so I could see how they didn't think it was wrong, but it was so wrong for me. Like it was.
And that's all that matters. Mm-hmm. That's all that matters. Because you have to, that's the part where you have to stay true to yourself so that every moment that you walk, you're like, hey, I may have failed, may have not, but I stuck to my values. And that's good for you.
Thank you.
I'm proud
of
you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's also like how we can lose ourselves, like all those like little compromises. You make a few and it's okay, but then you keep making them and keep making them, which in with another client, like that's what I was doing. And then I hated them and I was like, wait a second, this is my fault. Like it's my fault for saying yes, 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 yes. Like they gave me a choice and like, what am I doing? Why am I suffering? They're not suffering. Like, what if I just say no, or say no more often, or say no in different ways in a way that's like what if I find a compromise so that I'm still getting the work done, but I'm not doing it, but I'm doing it in a way that's authentic to myself? Because you keep doing that and next thing you know, 5 years in, you're like, who am I?
Yes.
Yeah. That's something that resonates so much. About like 5 years ago, I had this, I felt like I was literally like hit by a weight, and I was getting a mug out of my cabinet, and I'm like very, very orderly. Like I love things in a certain size order and color coordinated, da, 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 whatever. So I'm getting a mug out the cabinet
and I'm like picturing all these matchy things.
I know,
me
too. Yes. Yes, you should. And what you're imagining is probably on point. And I bring it up because I'm grabbing this mug out of the cabinet, and I chose the mug that would keep everything in a certain order rather than like the one that brought me joy, like the small little things like, oh, I'm feeling pink today. Like, why don't I grab the pink one instead? And I don't know what it was about that moment, but I took it out and I was like, Courtney, how many times before this did you compromise on the things you actually want? And I know that sounds so small, but actually choosing the thing that like brings you joy. If it's that specific cup, if it's that seat in a restaurant, if it's taking a 5-minute walk break, even though someone else says, hey, this meeting needs to go long, like whatever it is, like those little yeses to ourselves lead to so much confidence. And it's very affirmative. Like I think every little yes like that is very much affirming. Hey, Courtney, I trust you. Hey, Courtney, I love you. Hey, Courtney, you know what you want. And it really like builds up. So I'm really glad you brought that up. I was listening and I was like, brought me all the way back to that time I grabbed the mug.
The mug moment.
The mug
moment. But imagine if all of us were doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I agree with you. I mean, the example you gave is so powerful. Because it resonates and it could go into any different way. How many times are we compromising because we do not want to misalign some things or break some rules, right? Mm-hmm. That somebody has put, that society or corporate or whoever it is might have put in front of us or in our way. And we're just like, oh, we'll just walk this path instead of staying authentic to yourself or what brings you joy. Something as simple as what brings you joy. That pink cup brings me joy. Let's get that cup.
It is. Yeah, it's the small things. Actually, Elisa, I feel like I don't know if we knew it. For some reason, this would be a moment where I would normally call you after it. So as my head, I was like, did I call her after that? I don't think we knew each other yet.
No, I feel like I would remember a pink mug story. we're talking about moving together and what does this mean? I mean, and we also talked about not doing this alone, having friends, having peers, having mentors. And I remember a time I have a coach. She's like my on and off coach all the time. And I was like having a really bad day and I sent her a voicemail. That's how we communicate most of the times. And I was like, this is my life. All I do is work. I wake up and I work and I go to sleep, you know, and I was like, I hate my life moment, you know, kind of thing. And she was like, well, whose choice is that?
Ooh.
You can live whatever kind of life you want. And so this is obviously your choice to work all the time. Yeah. Yeah.
She's so right.
Wow. I'm stunned. I like can't even keep talking right now. I'm like, wait.
Yeah, I wanted to throw the phone.
Wow.
But I love that because this That's is a so time good. Where we need people to kind of tell us how it is, right? Like, this is what you're doing. You have the choice. And I think sometimes we're so into the rat race, we forget that we have a choice. And we live what we allow to come in our lives, right? So I think the other piece too is when we tell these stories, we show other people that it's okay to make the mistakes. It's okay to feel like that. But there is a way. There is an answer. We have choices. And that I know, and especially with this podcast, where so many women that we've been able to amplify their voices, and they've shared, right? Like, it's not easy. These are the things that come along, and they're still powerful women. They're still women making an impact.
I know as multicultural women, a lot of the guests that we've had on the podcast have said that they grew up hearing, like, you put your head down, you keep working, you work hard. And I was thinking earlier when we were talking about failure, like, there are some times where I could not share that, like, with my parents or my grandparents, because, like, if I told them about my failure, like, they would say, oh, no, like, they would get really worried for me. And then if I also... There are other situations where if I said, I'm working a lot, they would say, good. Like, that's what you're supposed to do. And so I'm curious for you guys, like, if there are stories that you've heard from our guests or anything that you've experienced yourself, like, from a cultural perspective, are there any cultural, like, expectations that go against the things that we're talking about right now?
Oh, yes. Where to begin? Where to begin? I think, you know, going full circle to the beginning of the conversation when we were talking about the mirrors that these other women have created for us and the mirrors we create for other women, I think one of the biggest ones for me, to be completely vulnerable here, is when it comes to, like, education. And I remember being in grad school, and transparently, that was one of the hardest, most miserable years of my life. Not because I didn't enjoy, I loved my grad program. I loved my professors. I loved the people I went to school with. But it was just like a really uncharacteristically difficult year. And I was facing depression at the time. And one of my mentors at the time pulled me in, and it was someone in the program. And it broke my heart. And she was like, Courtney, you are someone that has so much vibrance and so much light in your eyes. And I don't see that light. And I haven't seen it for a few weeks. And I just cried. And I was like, well, dang, like, I feel like I need to show up as, like, a happier version of myself. But the reason it became more serious is because I've never shared this publicly, but I was like, I don't know if I'm going to finish this program and graduate. Like, I was really, really, really spread thin. And so that's what the conversation was about. And I had this pressure, this like cultural pressure on myself to be like, oh my God, Courtney, do you know how many women of color like don't even have the opportunity to go to grad school? What if you don't finish? What if you're not enough? And if you don't finish, like, what if someone's looking to you to be their mentor and then you let them down? Like, there were just so many heavy thoughts in my head around that, to like not just finish, but also be great in the process, even though I was transparently suffering inside.
And you look tore up. I saw you.
I appreciate the honesty. I love you for it. You know, and you've seen me through so many phases, Elisa. Like, truthfully, yeah. I looked like a wreck. Like, I couldn't hide it. Smiling felt like a chore. It just, like, it was not fun. But honestly, then Elisa was, like, the light for me that pulled me up. Like, we had lots of venting conversations, and they were so healing for me. And yes, I could have also had those conversations with other women in my life, but I think having another multicultural woman who had also been through grad school, and we have similar faith backgrounds, and just having someone who I could relate to so much to keep me going forward is like everything I honestly needed at that time. So thank you for loving me through my toe-up mess. Okay.
You know, what I would say, and I'm sure you all experienced this, every organization, even department within organizations, are going to have different cultures. Within your town, city, state, there's going to be different cultures. So for me, one of the questions I often get asked is, how do I adapt my leadership approach when faced with these different cultures? And I go back to something we talk about, is owning my power. And what is my power? It's not my title. My power is my confidence in my authenticity, in my leadership. So a lot of the times we think owning your power comes with a title. It doesn't. It comes with the confidence that I have on my authenticity. That's my greatest asset. And I cannot compromise that when it comes to adapting or not adapting to different cultures. The other piece that I try to navigate is, when it comes to embracing adversity, is how do I navigate the organizational culture or whatever cultures are going on around me? Because, you know, flexing your style and navigating the different cultures is part of growth. What is not acceptable is going back to something Elisa said earlier, is I don't compromise my values. And then finally, what I would say the biggest thing from a cultural perspective, and speaking about all this, what is the word that can't be used anymore, the DEI word? I go back to this. At the end of the day, a great leader does not need a DEI label to be intentional about building inclusive cultures. Look around you, and if they just look at their organizations, look at their leadership teams, and look at their teams. That will speak louder than any label that you put in or take out. So at the end of the day, when you want to talk about all the cultural changes that are happening around us, this is where I believe the true leaders that believe in inclusive cultures will rise. Because I never needed a DEI title, and I know neither any of you. So when you talk about cultures, yes, they're going to be all around us. They've always been. Many of us came from, you know, either you moved to a different state, you moved to a different town, or you moved up to a different country, and we adapted. But don't get it twisted. We don't need a label to work intentionally and make a difference. And my values, my purpose has not changed. Nothing or any label or anything anyone says can change the fact that I want to create a world where multicultural women in positions of power are the norm. And only I determine when I stop doing that. Nobody else can. So that's what I would say to people when you talk about the cultures. Now is the time to break the rules. Now is the time to be intentional. Now is the time to walk boldly in your purpose and stop with the excuses, because I'm not buying them. I never needed them, and they're not stopping me.
Wow. Snap, 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 snap,
go.
All around.
All around.
You know, it's so funny, Mirari. I was just thinking, if Mirari didn't bring, like, her Puerto Rican Bronx background self that says things like, don't get it twisted, like, that is so you being, like, in your authentic confidence, and, like, the impact that those like nuances have on like how you speak, it's like so powerful because you're being so you, and like I want to keep listening.
Oh my God, I'm just a little bit passionate about my purpose, that's all.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, we are here because of the generations of women who have come before us. And they've been here, by the way. Like, they didn't just start coming up. There have been so many women before us who have set the stage, opened doors. We're continuing to do it for others. And we're learning as we go, like, how to own our power, how to yes. set boundaries, how to stay authentic, how to speak up, when to stay quiet, you know, how to claim your seat, how to crush the table, like all the things, right? And so understanding how we are as a leader and how we're going to bring others along is like just a really powerful place to come from, no matter what you're doing.
Yes. I go back to embrace the adversity and live your purpose. Live your purpose. Like, we're unstoppable. Let's do this. If you really want to live your purpose, stop with the excuses. Go and take action today. Go mentor, go sponsor, go make a difference in somebody's life and stop making the excuses. As multicultural women, I mean, if you're going to let an excuse get in your way of your purpose, then maybe there's some different conversations we need to be have. But this is the What Rules podcast. So at the end of the day, I'm going to challenge every woman out there to go and break the rules, be intentional, and go lead, because you are made for the time like this.
Want more advice on how to break the rules and outsmart the game to advance your career? Check us out on Instagram, YouTube, and our website, whatrulespodcast.com. For more insight from our guests and host, and join our community on LinkedIn, where we discuss rule-breaking strategies for multicultural women. What Rules is a project of Zara Consulting and is supported by the amazing team at Stories Bureau. This episode was produced by Alexandra Uresta, with editing and music supervision by Joshua Ramsey, and was engineered and mixed by Tim Ballant. Our podcast cover was designed by DeLeon Creative. Visit whatrulespodcast.com for more info, upcoming events, and all episodes of What Rules, including video. And make sure to give us a follow.